Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're getting into another artificial intelligence discussion. We've had a number of these on this platform, looking at it from a number of different perspectives, employment, focus groups, marketing, telecoms, all of these areas that are already being touched by artificial intelligence or are going to be touched by it. And especially now that we are in the realm of generative, AI that can actually produce something, ChatGPT and the like, producing text. But more and more we're seeing platforms like OpenAI, Sora. You just type in some words, creates a video. Midjourney, type in some words, create a create an image. And also people are creating more and more in the audio realm. So for today, we are going to be having a conversation about the potential impact or the impacts thereof for the music industry. And I think there's no organization better to make sense of it for us than the South African Music Rights Organization, that is SAMRO. And for today, we're going to be in conversation with Chola Mahamate, who is the general manager for legal services at SAMRO. Chola, thank you so much for having us here at your offices today.
No, thank you for coming to have a conversation with me here today.
Before we get into the AI discussion, we always want to understand the context that our experts are coming from. So SAMRO, my understanding is that South African Music Rights Organization, helping to collect, because I know that there's a difference between royalties and that type of thing, collecting those on behalf of musicians and musicians and artists in South Africa. And I also know that there's a difference between the performer, the publisher, and the so that's my understanding of SAMRO, helping to collect the money on behalf of artists, but also helping to educate artists about what their rights are in the music industry. Do I understand that correctly?
You do, but maybe let me just give a little bit of context about not just SAMRO, because SAMRO is one of many what we call collective management organizations. So SAMRO is an organization that derives its mandate from the Copyright Act. And we are an organization that administers copyright on behalf of composers, authors, and publishers. Yes. It's just a fancy way of saying we are the middleman between those who use the works of our members. So that can be whether it's a restaurant, stadium, online platform, shops. There are various users of music in the economy, and we effectively license them for the use of our members' works, so that they can use those and have a blanket license without attracting liability for the use of that, and also pay us over a license fee, which we then administer. They provide us certain data as it pertains to usage, et cetera, and that translates into what we pay out as royalties to composers, members, and authors. And we administer specifically what we call a public performance right. So when your work is performed in public. And there are other collective management organizations that also administer different rights. Because when you write a song or you write a book, there are certain rights, they call them a bundle of rights, that accrue to you as the creator of that work. So think of it, a simple example is like a vase with roses. Think of that vase as maybe a song that you've composed, right? And each rose stem is a different right that accrues to you and a different way you can make money from that particular vase. And we are one stem, a performance right. Okay. There'll be another collecting society, for instance, like Capasso, that administers a mechanical right. You have an Sampra Impra that administers a different right. And they are not only just rights from there, there are other ways, there are other revenue streams that you can generate from each stem of roses in that vase. And that's just one work. So if you've got multiple vases with roses, there are multiple ways you can make money from what the bundle of rights that accrue from copyright in a work. So we are just but one element in terms of this big bunch of roses in that vase. And we do that. So we collect license fees and pay out royalties. Like you say, we educate. We advocate for our members. We're required. We take legal action on behalf of our members where there's an infringement of copyright. So we do play a very significant role in the lives of composers, authors, and publishers in South Africa, but also internationally, because we have bilateral agreements with sister societies across the world where we also collect and then pay over for them, and then they pay accordingly in their territories.
Okay, cool. That gives us a good, you know, insight. And I think I need to probably come back here and have another discussion, you know, because I've done quite a bit of work around the fact that a lot of artists actually aren't aware about the vase and the different stems that are open to them. But one of the things, maybe before we get off this, all of these different players in your ecosystem, whether it's Samro, Sampra, Capasso, Risa, all of these, are they government affiliated, all of them, or are any of them in the private sector?
So we are all save for a few. It's a very interesting system. We are accredited by the DTIC per the regulations, but we're not regulated.
Okay.
Currently there's a move to regulate all CMOs. Impra and Sampra are regulated by the DTIC, but because they, as neighboring rights, came a little bit later, you remember that Sampra used to be, we used to administer neighboring rights as Samro, but that was spun out from us. And because of the one right per collecting society rule that came, and they were established as a separate collecting society administering needle time rights. So they, because they came at a later stage and are regulated by a DTIC, but there is a move currently with the impending legislation to regulate all collecting societies.
Okay, makes perfect sense. So let's get into the meat and potatoes of why you and I are talking today, the issue of AI. There's a lot going on in this space. I think I began talking about the fact that it's the generative AI piece that has people talking. AI has been there for a long time, but now we are seeing it, you know, maybe filtering in. One of the biggest debates that I've noted is that there's thinking that whether it's on the artist side or the label side, people are now experimenting with creating music using artificial intelligence. You input a sample of someone's voice, and then the software can recreate that person's voice based on, let's say, here's a verse, sing this verse or rap this verse according to XYZ. Who benefits from something like that?
Definitely not the original. Okay, I'll put a caveat.
Yeah.
Under normal circumstances, if somebody wants to use something that's yours, right, they must ask you for permission. Mm-hmm. And depending on what the use is, they must pay you for the use of that. So that's the general principle now. And I must articulate upfront that there are benefits for AI. It is here. We have been using it in various forms in our homes, businesses, whatever the case is. It's just that now what we would call, quote unquote, military grade AI, for argument's sake, has now become commercially available. That's where we're sitting with now. But it's been there. I mean, with Siri or whatever on our phones, some of the technology we have in our homes, there is a benefit for the use of AI. And that AI is AI that requires a lot of human intervention. You need to input quite a lot for it to do certain things. I think what you are talking about now is AI that doesn't require, it's intelligent AI, if I can call it that. It doesn't require a lot of human intervention, and it's reached a point where it can create things with minimal input. Now, the problem is you can't use my likeness or my voice, whatever the case may be, without asking my permission to do so. Because what you will do is that you will do that. I've worked hard to create this work. I should be compensated under normal circumstances for this work. I should be acknowledged for this work.
Yeah.
You simply take it, or the machine simply takes it. You give the machine this thing, and you then want to generate something new on the basis of something that was protected legally to begin with. And the person who was protected, who had that protection and had the ability to earn money from it and the ability to earn acknowledgement from it, is not getting that anymore. But you have now taken that and have used that and have now created something else, which you will probably benefit from and you will probably protect legally so that nobody else, you know, can come after you for it. That's where the problem is. I think there's no problem with innovation. There's a place for AI in terms of assisting with the creation of works. There's nothing new under the sun, particularly in the creative space. Something motivates you, something makes your creative juices flow, whatever the case may be. That happens, which is why with copyright, novelty is not a requirement for copyright to accrue, as is with patents, where something has to be novel. It's never been done before. You know, it just must be original. You must show that you've exercised your creative juices or your creative abilities. You've added something new. You've made it different or significantly different to something that was there before. You know, and that's, you know, that's the originality test with copyright. So we understand that, and AI can help with that. But the basic principle of seeking permission, remunerating, those things must still be there. And unfortunately, because everything's happening so fast with AI, those things are not there. And the big tech guys are taking advantage of that because you have this machine now. And that's the thing with AI, right? It's not like me and you where it would take us hours, days, weeks, months to trawl through information and data, works, songs, whatever, to find the perfect thing. This thing, the information is out there. Finds it quickly, within seconds or whatever the case may be. Like you said, type in a few words, boom, you've got something, a work that's been created.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, as you were talking, the thing that immediately came to my mind was fair use. And now I'm wondering, obviously I'm not a lawyer, but now I'm wondering, surely there's a question that the legal experts are going to have to answer there, not only in South Africa, but around the world, to say, where does fair use begin and end in a world of AI, right? I might sit there and say, well, me as Mudiwa, I'm not good at singing, right? But perhaps Daliwonga or, you know, something Soweto, you know, those guys have great voices, right? Now, I go and I input their voices into a system, and then I go and I do the work, quote unquote, of coming up with lyrics. I'm inspired, like what you said. I write these verses and I'm like, this is so great. And then, you know, I've put something in there, right? And then they, what do you call this? They can, maybe I'll use a sample of a particular song and then I'll say that my addition, my contribution, because usually fair use is there's an existing work. What have you done to add to it? Now I've taken the sample, but I can extend the sample because I now have a person's voice and I can make the person sing other things. So I'm just wondering, it's just me, you know, literally throwing things into the air, you know, around some of those legal questions.
So fair use is an exception to copyright. It's a defense someone would use for using your work or parts of your work, whatever the case, to create a new work. We currently do not have fair use as an exception to copyright in our law. That's what they're looking to introduce into our law. We currently have fair dealing.
Yeah.
And fair dealing is a closed list. So we all know under what circumstances someone can take your work and use it. Without necessarily remunerating you, you know, asking for permission. We know what the circumstances are. So we have that certainty in our law. If they introduce the Copyright Amendment Bill, we'll have a problem there and then we'll have these arguments. But that's the tricky thing with fair use is that, and in particular in the US, if you look at the current cases that are open with regards to AI and copyright infringement and fair use in particular, there are a number of cases right now in the US where they're trying to decide on these particular issues as they pertain to AI, copyright, and fair use as a defense thereof. And one of the main, obviously, transgressors would be like your OpenAIs, your Microsoft is up there. But it's an issue that is being now adjudicated upon by third parties. And that's the issue with fair use. It's judge-made law. You have to look at every circumstance of alleged copyright infringement and look at the case by case. And then a judge, you make a determination as to whether or not it's fair use or whether or not there's been an infringement of copyright. So it depends on the facts of the case. It depends on what's been done the judge and what the current prevailing circumstances are. And even they are struggling because there is this mad rush now to have some either jurisprudence or legislation, regulation, etc., as it pertains to AI and what needs to be done and how it needs to be handled. So it's a very new area of the law. There's case law on a daily basis. I'm reading some state in the US has got an act that they've put out. I know the European Union put out the AI Act. It was passed this year. So there's stuff happening on a regular basis, but the functioning, the stuff that's happening with AI is also happening on a regular basis. And unfortunately, because we are in the creative and cultural industries, it's not to our benefit. And we are on the back foot, especially in South Africa, with regards to how we deal with those issues in particular. Take an organization for Samro, for instance. Worldwide, currently we recognize that a human being is the one that creates a work.
Yeah.
How do we deal with AI? In our legislation, we do deal with computer-generated works, and the person who controls that is the one who is the owner of the copyright, et cetera, et cetera. But in other jurisdictions, that's not necessarily so crystal clear. So there's a lot of things. Who do you pay? How do you deal with the splits? You know, so there's just
a split sheet with AI.
it's such a minefield. And every day, there's something happening in some part of the world with regards to AI.
Oh, so my question then becomes, with so much happening around the world around AI, because if we boil down everything that you and I are talking about, this is a money discussion. Mm. This is about who's making the money or who can protect their money, right? In essence, that's what, you know, this whole debate and discussion is about. All of the stuff that's happening around the world, has any of it translated locally? Are there any local cases or are we yet to, you know, encounter that, in the local law system?
So there have been one or two local cases, references, which I'd have to share with you a little bit later. Yeah. But there's nothing that's meaty that we can say this is specific precedent that deals with this AI issue. Yeah. And we are really following or keeping an eye on what's happening everywhere else in the world. Yeah. There is a conversation that has commenced from a policy perspective, yeah, by the Department of Communications and Technology. Mm-hmm. They held an AI summit on the 5th of April this month. But they held an AI summit where Microsoft was one of the main players in the room. And they called it a national summit, but there's the stakeholders that were there. There's a limited number of stakeholders. So the conversation was devoid of a lot of elements that need to go into a conversation around AI. It was devoid, for instance, the culture and creative industries were not in the room. And we are heavily impacted from a copyright perspective from AI. There are other issues you need to look at. You need to look at issues around cybersecurity, privacy, data protection, how AI impacts that, issues around your deep fakes, fake news. there's a whole wide spectrum of things that need to happen. But the conversation that happened was quite limited. They've issued a policy or discussion document, not for public comment. Yet, but Parliament did have a meeting, I believe it was on the 10th or the 11th of April, where they issued a statement and made note about AI in very broad terms, how it's supposed to assist society, blah, blah, blah. But I think, as has been the case from a policy perspective in South Africa over the last few years, there is no real cognizance of the topic that they are tackling and the stakeholders that need to be brought around the table, into the room, to actually understand what's happening. And also to where we've done well was under data protection laws. I think there we've done very well. I think we've looked at what's happened around the world. We looked at what happened in the EU and how they've handled it. And we did transplant quite a bit of that. But I think there we've put in a lot of thought process and a lot of clever, critical minds looking at that issue. But as it pertains to things around copyright, as you can see with the current process, now AI, as you can see, they'll talk about the fourth industrial revolution, et cetera, but they'll talk about it in particular industrialization terms, but they'll forget about the intellectual property component of it. So it's a very scattered way of dealing with a very important topic.
Yeah, because one of the things I was quite curious to understand with what's going on in the world is where South Africa is. And I guess you've encapsulated, you know, quite well, you know, to say this is where we are. The discussions are being had, but certain players are being left, you know, from the table. My question then is to say, there's been a lot of debate around something like the Copyright Act, right? Is that the right piece of legislation to attack this element around AI, or come up with a fresh policy, what you call this? Maybe we begin with a sandbox, but something completely fresh, and take it, you know, and have a completely separate piece of legislation that's dealing specifically with AI, as has been done in the EU.
I think we need something that's dealing with AI, taking into cognizance the different aspects. So to say, I would be selfishly saying in the Copyright Act, but that just affects copyright. You know, there are AI implications in POPIA, PIA, cybersecurity, communications, broadcast. So there are AI implications across the board. So I think we would need a piece of legislation that takes that into account, have particular principles, like the principles that are set out in the EU AI Act, that deal with AI and how it must be dealt with. So for instance, with issues like generative AI, it's going to happen. People are going to use data, with copyright protected or not. There must be accountability, there must be transparency, there must be some sort of reporting about what you are using so that everybody is aware what you have used and we're able to track and see who must be remunerated, because it's going to happen. So we need to manage it. But that's speaking selfishly from a copyright perspective and a creative and cultural industries perspective. You need to work, for instance, with the information regulator and how they're dealing with privacy and those kinds of things. You need to work, for instance, with Department of Justice. So you need to have a multi, for lack of a better word, disciplinary piece of legislation
that deals
with everything and have proper references to the right pieces of legislation, so that at least you know, okay, this is an AI act, but as it pertains to privacy, it's cross-referencing this in POPIA or PIA or whatever the case may be. Otherwise, we'll have to have an exercise of revising all of these pieces of legislation.
Yeah. The other thing, from a practical point of view, right? Because like you said, perhaps it's best to have something new, multi-pronged, interdisciplinary, so that you attack the broad swath of stakeholders across the economy. Right, is as SAMRO, right? Do you guys have any flexibility on this matter, right? Because whilst the debates and the discussions are happening, the music and the creative works are being created, right? Which means you guys have to do your job one way or another. In the absence of something formal, are you allowed to just continue, I guess, operating and maybe doing it case by case? I don't know how this stuff works.
So, and this conversation, I think in January, there was a meeting held where lawyers and practitioners across the country were like, what do we do? Because we have no policy, we have no legislation. What do we do at an operational level? And the conversation was there at a sector level. At a company level, we need to be able to deal with AI. And one of the things that we need to do is we need to do risk assessments to understand, because we're going to use it. I mean, already employees are using it with ChatGPT, and there are implications if you're not using it properly, blah, blah, blah. How do we use it? What do we want? How are we going to use it? How is it going to affect our company, affect our stakeholders, one of them being employees for us, our members, et cetera, and the use thereof. Look at what it is that we need, assess the risk, assess the benefit. We need to have AI strategies in place in our organizations or in our sectors so that we know what it is that we're moving towards. So look at what your operations are, how you want to utilize AI, do a risk assessment and how it's going to impact your policies, your stakeholders, et cetera, and then put things in place whilst we are awaiting our government to come up with policy. And because at that point in time, they'd not had the summit, our thinking was, let's tackle it the same way we tackled POPIA, where the EU led the charge internationally and the rest of the world followed. A commission was set up there. Directives were given. We followed those directives and, you know, internalized them nationally so that we at least had something to follow going forward. So a lot of us would be looking in the absence of specific direction here, looking at what's happening in the EU in particular, because they do have an act, looking at what WIPO's doing. WIPO recently issued...
What is WIPO?
Sorry, World Intellectual Property Organization. Yeah. They recently issued a document providing some guidelines on how to deal with AI, some of the risks, some of the mitigating factors, et cetera, et cetera. So there is information out there and there are guidelines out there that can be provided at a company level to ensure that at least we're mitigating very big risks around data protection, very big risks around cybersecurity, and for us to localize it, the risks around how we deal with the works that our members are creating and advising them and advocating for them. In how they utilize AI and how we then deal with, I think particularly how we then deal with conflicts that arise from the use of AI.
You know, I was reading a stat the other day. I think the number that came through was creative industries in South Africa, depending obviously on who's measuring. You're looking at roughly 100 billion rand in a year. And that's why I said, depending on who's measuring, this is the number that that I read. And for such a big industry, I don't know if I get the sense that there is enough engagement from a policy point of view. We've been, we recently had a discussion with the audiovisual guys, and those guys are not happy with some of the decisions that have been taken around tax incentives that bring, let's say, foreign films or attract foreign films or foreign people to come and create their TV shows and films in South Africa as opposed to going to other parts of the world. And one of the things that came out of at least some of the industry players that we've spoken to is they felt like there wasn't enough engagement with industry players to inform the decisions and, you know, the regulations that ended up coming out, you know, from DTIC. So I'm just wondering, and I'm hoping that we're not at risk of yet another process that doesn't take into consideration the industry players in that policy-making process.
You've hit the nail on the head. And like you're saying, depending on who you're speaking to, because the South African Cultural Observatory that does do research in the CCIs, I think their stats were between 2-4% of GDP.
Oh, nice.
Which is potentially on par with agriculture, but they take agriculture more seriously than they do. and it's the framing of the CCIs. Firstly, when people think, like government in particular, and when they think of the CCIs, they think music, firstly. They gravitate towards that. And they just think singing and dancing. They don't understand the fact that it's the CCIs are industries that are based on rights, the trading on rights, the protection thereof, the commercialization thereof. They don't understand the value chains. They don't understand how the industries interact with each other. They don't understand how the money is made in the CCI. They actually don't understand. And you can see how they treat it. They don't understand that music is separate from audiovisual, for instance. I don't even think they see audiovisual as the CCIs. I think And audiovisual is treated better, by the way.
Really?
than the rest of us. At least they engage them at a policy level because there's a lot of money in audiovisual.
Yeah.
You're talking about big blockbuster films. You're talking about big production houses. They can relate if you talk about a Netflix, you know, or something like that. That concept or multi-choice, that one they understand, right? But even then, in terms of like, how is the money actually made?
Yeah.
How are your policies impacting how the money is made? How are international investors looking at your country and seeing a country where there's no clarity, there's confusion, something could change any day, and that will impact investment. When you talk about investment to them from a mining perspective or something else, that is very clear. But when you talk about investment in terms of CCI, I don't know where the disconnect is. They just don't get it. And that's why they make the decisions they make. And even where they do consult, it's a tick box exercise, something that they just have to do. So that's the problem that they have. There's no respect of the CCIs. Hence, even when they are trade visits or when they go on their missions, whatever else the case may be, you don't take a CCI delegation. You take mining, you take everybody else, but because you don't respect the importance of, and the multiplier effect actually of the culture and creative industries, you don't take us, you don't see us in economic terms. You see us in entertainment terms. But there's value. Entertainment is a multi-billion dollar industry. But you don't see us that way locally.
Mm. Funny enough, the audiovisual guys also spoke to the point around the multiplier, you know, effect, because when you're filming something or even just music, there's a lot going on inside what you call this, especially a big song, I think, is an easier thing to think about. There's a lot of money that goes in there. Shows, festivals, merchandising, radio, streaming, you know, all of this stuff. And the people that get to write about this stuff, and you know, so there's a lot of money inside there. Before we end off, because we've identified with what's happening in the world, we've identified some of maybe the gaps or potential gaps when it comes to policy making on an industry level. What's happening there, right? Whether it's yourselves as SAMRO and other collection management organizations, CMOs, or, you know, maybe it's the labels or maybe it's the artists, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But in the music industry, is there any coalescing happening, you know, any discussions? You spoke earlier to say, as lawyers at the start of the year, people are having these discussions. But at a music industry level, what's happening there?
So one of my other hats is as chairperson of the Copyright Coalition of South Africa.
Yeah.
And we were formed really to address the issues pertaining to this Copyright Amendment Bill and the impact thereof. And our members include organizations, trade associations across the board,
yeah,
the CCI. So that would be inclusive of music, whether it be the labels, the publishers, the CMOs. We've got book publishers, book authors. We've got the audiovisual sector. We've got animation in there as members. And this is something that we're having a conversation about it. We are now going to engage at this point before it goes too far with the department or whatever stakeholder there is to make sure that the CCIs are not left out of the agenda. Because the mistake we made with CAB is that there was a similar setup where a big tech company made a presentation to our policymakers about certain things. And now we find ourselves with the mess we find ourselves in. So we are really going to push from this point onwards to make sure that there's awareness, to make sure that we give input into the policies that are happening. I mean, even now at an AU perspective, I know there is a summit taking place this week around AI, where they're looking at potentially next year, the various members of the AU implementing whatever is discussed, and they're asking for input there. So things like that, where there's participation, so that we give our input so that we're not forgotten as the CCIs in this particular very important conversation.
No, definitely. And I think it's going to be one to watch. I'll tell you, one of the things that I'm personally watching is in the United States, I follow a lot of hip hop. At the time that we are recording this, there's this beef going on between Drake, Kendrick, and J. Cole. And I found the Drake's use of AI in one of his diss tracks, very interesting. Interesting because I think when you look at artists, Drake is a huge capitalist. Mm. And whether it's himself or whether there's been some influence from the labels, I can draw somewhat of a straight, maybe a dotted line to say that they're probably using moments like this as a way to test public perception, public appetite towards AI-generated content, right? I mean, guys are having beef. These are diss tracks, right? But somehow, this AI that's been thrown into the mix, I don't think that's a mistake.
I think it's deliberate, and I think just from as an outsider, because I'm not like deeply involved in it, there's more focus on the beef than the other stuff. The AI is there, it's peripheral, and only some pundits are talking about it.
Yes.
But everyone is focused on the dissing.
Yes. Yes. And if we're not careful, you know, this thing that's happening on the side becomes bigger and bigger without us knowing that this thing is happening.
Correct. So we're sufficiently distracted by the non-issue.
What seems to be a non-issue now. All right. No, thank you so much. I think it has been a really great discussion. But one more thing on this is a personal thing. I have a fair, not detailed, but fair understanding of how music rights work, right? Royalties, mechanicals, performance rights, the difference between, you know, streaming platform, radio, TV, the fact that, you know, if you're a good nightclub, you must be sending track lists from the DJs. And I preface that because I know that it's not always the case.
Mm.
One of the things I'm yet to fully wrap my head around, and it's so fundamental, what is a master?
So when you go into studio, right, and you record, that what you record, that's essentially what the master is.
Is that the vase?
No. That's the sound recording. Okay. So it's one of the stems in the vase. The song is the vase.
The song is the vase.
Yes.
Okay.
And then the sound recording, because there is copyright in the sound recording. So you record that thing, and that is the master copy, whatever else the case may be. He or she who pays for the sound recording owns the copyrights in that.
Yes.
And then they can exploit
the other stems in the ecosystem.
No. So they can exploit the copyright in the sound recording.
Yes.
Depending on who the composer or composers are, they can exploit the copyright in the composition. Depending also, that then translates probably to the mechanical rights, because usually we at Asan Kapasa represent the same composers, publishers, and authors. So generally it would be the same. And the splits would be the same. So then they can exploit the mechanical and the PR in the composition. Then there's the issue about the sync rights, who exploit. So it depends who is the owner or the holder of the copyright.
Okay. There we go. I think that gives me a fuller picture.
Yeah. But when you go to studio, pay. You pay. You pay for that recording, right? You own the copyright.
Yes.
In that master recording.
All right. That makes perfect sense. I've actually heard sort of similar stories. It's one of those things that some in the legal fraternity say is going to become an issue one day, right? To say, when you record a podcast, it is assumed that the host, whoever has paid for the production, automatically owns that as intellectual property. But apparently, if there isn't a formal agreement to that effect, at least to my understanding, the final right still sits with the person that produced it. So who took the recording? So the production house.
It would probably be the production house.
Yeah.
They've set up the facilities. They're doing all the work. They've paid for it,
yeah.
Essentially. Yeah. The presenters and whatnot, that's talent, right? Yeah. And there's an agreement with talent, unless they have had an agreement as it pertains to IP,
yes,
with the production house.
Yes. So it was just one of those things that people are saying, that if people aren't careful with all this podcasting that's happening,
yeah,
people think they own their podcast, but
no,
later on down the line, they might find, oh, really? The other guy?
It's like with songs. People think the person who's singing the song owns the copyright, is making the most money. And you find that if they're not the composer or the author, they're just the performer, they're just going to earn what's due to them for performing the song, not necessarily everything else that comes with it. So you might look at different artists and say, but why is this one much richer than this one? No, this one owns the IP in their work, but they're also performing and they're earning money from the performance thereof. Whereas this one is just the face with the mic and everybody else in the background is making money.
Mm. So on that note, that's where we end off today's discussion. It has really been a great one. Thank you so much. You know, just talking to Chola about what's going on in the world of artificial intelligence as it pertains to music, getting into some of the big picture issues around the fact that people are now, you know, making more use of this, especially in a generative sense. One of the things that, you know, she, you know, I said repeatedly through this discussion is, guys, this thing is going to happen. This thing is going to happen. This thing is already happening. And we need to put together the right guardrails and the right frameworks around that, because people are already using this. People will be using this. For now, the discussions in South Africa, they are happening, but it does seem as if the cultural and creative industries have been, you know, largely left out, you know, some of those discussions. And yet, that is a big industry that operates, you know, quite a bit on, you know, copyrights and rights, that type of thing. And that really needs to be discussed. Also talking about the fact that we find ourselves in a moment, you know, where legislatively there will likely need to be a separate legislative process, a separate act that comprehensively deals with AI, because AI is one of those things that is multi-pronged, multi-discipline. It's one of those things that touches many different industries, and you really need to have something that's comprehensive. But more importantly, you need to have decision makers that actually understand how AI is impacting the different areas, because one of the things that Chola mentioned is the fact that there doesn't seem to be a proper understanding around the cultural and creative industries, and you know, which is why we repeatedly have this butting of heads between industry players, you know, and policy makers, you know, to say, hey, how did you guys come up with this thing? And that then has a lot of impacts, especially economically, because I like the thing that she said, to say that the creative industries are sort of driven by rights. That is literally how people are putting food on the table. You must find a way to know your right, to enforce your right, and protect your right. That's literally the entire game that's being played. And then ended off, you know, just talking about some of what's going on in the world, delving a little bit into hip-hop beef, but the fact that there are things happening on the periphery of some of those things that we look at as cultural moments, but will likely in future be seen as defining moments as it pertains to something like AI. And thank you to Chola for indulging me to make me understand, you know, what a master is. And I really like that example that you gave at the beginning of the vase and the stems in, and the different ways that artists can make money. So, has been it. It has been a really great conversation. Thank you so much. Chola is the general manager for legal services at SAMRO, which is the South African Music Rights Organization. Chola, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me, dear.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.